And welcome to the Public Safety and Correction Committee meeting of April 3rd. And this time I got the right agenda, so. So Nick, would you lead us in the pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Approval of the minutes, March 6th and March 27th.
So move, Potter.
Thanks.
Any additions or corrections? All in favor, signify by aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same, motion carried. Yep.
Good morning.
Good morning.
A couple items for you this morning. First item is the CAD system upgrade. We've been investigating the CAD system for a little less than a year now, looking at change out of the current CAD system that we have. The current CAD platform that we're on is the original CAD platform that we went into when we started 911. The vendor has notified us that we're coming end of life at the end of this year in November. So we would like to enter into contract with Tyler Technologies for $459,864. That's a one-time cost for the initial project to start a new CAD system here.
And we have that money in a capital project?
That will be coming out of capital project, and this is on the Sourcewell commodities.
Yeah, we've been, if you recall, so some of the 911 grants are formula-based, and we just have to show maintenance of effort. So every year, Tim and Tina submit 911 salaries against that, and we get a few hundred thousand dollars, $185,000 or so. So since for at least 5-6 years now, we've been appropriating, offsetting that. And then when we get that, putting that into that capital project. So capital project has about $1 million in it because we knew that this CAD replacement was going to be expensive. And no matter which way we did it, it would be expensive. So,
right.
How long have we had the old CAD system in?
The old CAD system is original from when we started 911. We've been through various different upgrades and changes to that CAD system, but the vendors notified us it's end of life. They're not going to support it anymore. So we have to make a move. And we anticipated we were going to have to make a move this year anyways. We've just kind of been, our timeline's been pushed up.
Do I have a motion?
I made a motion.
Second, Hannah.
Any further discussion?
Is there a change in the annual maintenance or support costs versus the old system?
I think it's actually a little less than what we were paying before, but we were on a hosted platform. So I believe what we were paying before was $100,000+ a year. And this is going to be right around $55,000 or so.
Yeah, our annual maintenance. Obviously, the first year would be included with the upgrade. Then the annual maintenance cost would drop roughly $30,000 the last time we talked about it.
Okay.
Anything else? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
Okay. Next, I have a change order for Motorola. This is on the current project. This is the Higman Hill antenna change. This is taking the antenna from the existing tower over to the 800-foot tower at Higman, going to 500 feet. It requires a new antenna feed line and also some changes to the combiner and retuning of the combiner. So the total on that is $49,492.
I'll motion.
Second, Potter.
Discussion?
And grant-funded, correct?
Yes, this will be grant-funded.
So all these moves we've been making over the last few years, when do we come to a conclusion?
There'll never be a conclusion on the radio project. The one benefit that we have is that the next project that we've been funded for is 5.8 million dollars for an upgrade to the system, which will really help us immensely to try to get us to where we want to go. So this is a stopgap to try and help to fill those gaps down in the Corning area and down in Irwin that we've been looking to do for a while.
Anybody have anything else? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
All right, I have one other item for you. And this is we have an aging antenna or aging tower at Mount Washington. The engineers came in and basically told us it's lived its life and it needs to come down. It's a 150 foot tower. We put an RFP out and the lowest bidder on that was Swerd Out Recycling for $25,000. And I have funds in the grant to be able to do that. So I'd like approval to award that RFP to Swerd Out Recycling for $25,000.
So we're taking this down. Are we replacing this?
Not at this time. I think there's most of the equipment that's on there is previous equipment from years ago. So it can come down. And I think anybody that's on there now, I think is amateur radio. There's some amateur radio stuff that's on there that we can move over to the 400 foot tower.
Okay. Motion, Potter.
Second, Horton.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Tim.
Tim?
Yeah.
How are we coming on Pinnacle Tower?
So they set the building last week. The tower should be here this week and begin erection of that. Then the last piece that we'll be waiting on is the generator to get that installed. And then just button up the site. Then we've got to move equipment over and get the final pieces of equipment in place to be able to get the install done. So I'm hoping, within a month or so, we should be able to finish that site up and be good to go.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Bob? On the Pinnacle Tower, the generator, that's for when you're off the power lines down?
Right. Right.
And how do you fire that with LP?
Yes.
Okay. Just curious.
Yep.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
John?
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
This morning, I'd like to request authorization to accept and appropriate the Harrell Herring Year 5 contract amendment. This represents a $321,147.56 increase from year four for a 5-year total of $4,817,213.43. This rounds out the development of the Harrell Herring settlement budget. And so what you're going to find is that there is a year six contract amendment, which will allow for budget modification of what we currently have. So it's sort of a bookend cleanup where we can reallocate funds for the first time because these are settlement funds. So they weren't subject to budget modification during the term of the contract amendments. So we'll do some cleanup in year six. And then after that, it will continue in perpetuity in a 3-year contract fashion. The reason why I'm coming to you today is because this wasn't completed prior to putting in this year's budget. And we want to make these funds available to make claims because if we're not making claims, it doesn't help in terms of getting state budget to continue to increase and keep the funding moving in our direction. So I'd like to ask for your approval for that today.
Motion, Horton.
Second, Potter.
Any discussion? So this thing runs on a fiscal year 4/1/22 to 3/31/23.
Yes, sir.
So do you have a budget in place for 23/24? That's the sixth year you're talking about?
No, not yet. So we, and we just, the way this played out is we ended up having to do the year four and year five budget prior to our budget cycle. Year four was approved. Year five was approved after the first of the year. So that's why we're making the adjustment now to get
Typical state grant programs were, they're always running behind. So the good news is everything that, you know, Sean or we have recommended for you to add to your budget is funded. Sometimes it just comes in a little late like this that, you know, recommend accepting, appropriating. So it's kind of a nightmare, especially with this one for Sean and Tammy and Mitch to track. But from a cash standpoint, you're good to go.
So we're already spending money for the sixth year at this point because we're into April.
No. So we haven't begun spending the year five money yet.
Okay, but even though the fiscal year is over with?
Yes. So that's the, I was about to say, to add insult to injury, not only is the state's, you know, fiscal cycle on this issue different from ours, but the contract, the first REL hearing year one didn't start until a year and 6 months into the contract.
You're spending your money with this.
So we get it back.
That's the easiest way to look at it is. This is the formal guarantee that it's coming in, but in ILS, especially with the Hurrell Herring settlement, we knew that these funds are guaranteed. So when we spend the county funds, you know, I guess the state legislature could, you know, cut this, but this is one that they'd be subject to suit. They've already settled on this. So we feel.
So all these expenses are built into the budget. So, and we're just anticipating the revenues.
Correct. Coming in.
Okay. All right. Anything else? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
Thank you.
All right. The sheriff.
Morning,
James.
Morning. I have one thing this morning, and that's the request for authorization to utilize opioid settlement funds to purchase the LifePak 15 AED, which will be used by our paramedic. Deputy Owen.
So this is inside the jail itself sitting out there?
No, this is in his vehicle with him as he's on patrol.
So we don't have any other defibrillation units sitting out there, portable ones?
We have AEDs in every car, and we have AEDs in the jail, on the boat, pretty much everywhere we operate. This is a different level specific to his paramedic status.
Okay.
And the licensure, because when I saw the price tag too, Sheriff Tim and I had a lot of conversation. This is for any paramedic that anyone has. This is the one that goes with that. It's a 12 lead instead of the regular, the regular AEDs. And we've talked with the sheriff as our EMS involvement or your EMS involvement evolves, Deputy Owen has the potential here to, you know, help with intercepts and those sort of things, especially being certified as a paramedic.
So he's the only paramedic you have.
Actually, we have two now. We have one that's an SRO also.
Mm-hmm. Do I have a motion?
A motion.
So, further discussion?
If we get a if we move down the path with EMS and get a coordinator, trainer, whatever that position is, and give them a vehicle, are they going to be needing one of these as well?
Depends. If we hire a EMS coordinator who is a paramedic, then probably we'd be looking at something like that to outfit, because we talked about it being a, you know, a fly car. Depends on what we get. We, I think, preferred a paramedic in that EMS coordinator position, but it wasn't required. So
thought that hopefully that's who was going to be applying.
Correct. Yeah. And with the salary range that you set for the EMS coordinator, you would hope a paramedic with, you know, experience would apply for something like that. Yeah.
So are non-paramedics able to operate this type of equipment?
No.
I mean, this isn't going to be a slippery slope where we have one, now we need more for every vehicle.
No, what the deputies have, the EMTs and the non-EMT deputies, they all have regular AEDs, which is, it would be like comparing my Kubota to a payloader. Okay. They're very, very different. The AEDs tell you either shock, don't shock, start CPR. This has 15 leads and measures the respirations. It checks the heart rhythm. It does all of that stuff that a paramedic can deal with. For the EMTs and the basic deputies, it's either shock or CPR or do nothing.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So we probably need a running total of the opioid funds as to at some point as to what is available. And what Scott's point is that maybe we could use some of those funds with the new EMT
with some
operations.
We can. I'd recommend on this to use your share of the opioid settlement, not the state share. The state share comes with a lot of other reporting requirements because this won't be used exclusively for treatment prevention. The state's was very, very specific, but your share, we estimate, you know, 23-24 revenue you have left is about $200,000 that we know of before. Actually, that's before the other settlements that you just approved last week. So there's funds available for this.
All right. So I have a motion in a second.
So move, Potter.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Aye. Motion carried.
Thank you.
Thank you. Excuse me. District Attorney.
I think the first thing we have on the agenda is the adding an indigent track to our traffic diversion program. As you recall, during the local law, we have to come back in front of you guys to talk about the idea of changing fee structure. So we've gotten some feedback from our local courts and from some people, just civilians who've dealt with the program, that they'd like to take it, but they don't have the money. Or if it's, you know, their child getting a ticket, mom and dad are picking up the diversion costs because they want to save their insurance, and there's no way around that. The state has gone to recognizing indigency for tickets and collecting fines and almost everything across the board on the criminal side. We're a little bit behind the curve, and that's why we wanted to add an indigent track to the program where someone can make an application. We'll figure out what the income guidelines are for indigency. We sort of got to figure out what that is, or a hardship application. If it is granted, then what we would do is ask them to perform 10 hours of community service somewhere in our community. And then they would pay the cost of the program, which is the administrative fee that we pay to the people who service the program. Noel, how much is that?
It's the baseline.
Okay, so $27.50 plus they'd have to pay for their own safe driver course, which ranges anywhere from $25 to $50.
So in your statement you said out there, it made mention that the courts now have some leniency as to these fines that are imposed on these people.
Well, what they do is if someone
status,
if a fine is imposed for someone, say $250 for a couple of tickets, then, and they cannot pay it, the court cannot scofflaw them for not being able to pay the fine. They can put them on a payment program where they pay small amounts every week in perpetuity. So basically the state is to some extent given up on collecting traffic fines. They can enter a civil judgment against these folks and it sits out there and I've got a stack up on my desk that I have to review and then turn over to Judy to put into the court system. But they're not scofflawing and taking licenses away for that. And they become much more lenient in the process. So we are just sort of falling in line with the rest of the vehicle and traffic program across the state. Again, I think anything we can do that makes us consistent with them keeps us under the radar, which is part of the goal. On a state side, though, I'm absolutely confident in the legality of our program. I don't want to have somebody come after us and say, well, it's not an equal protection problem. I can't pay, so therefore I don't get the benefit. In this situation, we take the fee down to about $27.50 plus, you know, no more than $75, which is about the same as a state surcharge on any ticket, and then some community service. And I think that's
so what is the normal when somebody gets a speeding ticket in one of these courts, what's the fine and the surcharge?
Well, the surcharge is it 85 now?
93.
90. Okay. So you have $90 plus a ticket can range anywhere from $100 to $300. So you're probably right now they're about $250 or $300 for a ticket. And again, they're not having to pay most of that. Or if we reduce it, it's probably $190 or $200 is an average.
The total, my understanding of this total, you know, this driver diversion program is simply to expunge the amount of what I want to say, points that somebody has on their license. That's the biggest thing sitting out there. So now we're not only expunging that, we're also taking and eliminating the fee involved in this thing.
Well, the biggest thing is traffic safety. That's why we started the program. I want somebody to go through one of those insurance reduction, those point reduction classes, because again, that's a couple of hours. And I don't know if you guys have to go through it. I have to go through it every couple of years with the county and always come away with something. And that's what got this program started, was anybody who takes that course will be a safer driver at the back end. My thought is the number of folks who want to do that and then also give up 10 hours of a weekend or a couple of days to do community service is going to be very, very small. But we're going to offer that. If my 17, almost 18-year-old son picks up a speeding ticket, I would much rather him do 10 hours of community service and pay $75 than my pay the entire shot and he not suffer any consequence. So that's something that, again, it opens the door to parents. It opens the door to those who simply can't afford to pay the fee, but need their license to drive or can't have the points or something like that. So I think it is a fundamentally fair way to add to our program and make sure that we are doing the right thing and make it open for as many people as possible under the idea of traffic safety. I don't think the number of folks who are going to want to do this is very large. It is cost neutral because we're picking up all the costs of the program through what they are going to have to pay. So that doesn't cost us anything. And the real number of people who are going to take advantage of this and want to give up, you know, a weekend or 10 hours of community service to avoid something they can just pay a couple hundred dollars for is going to be pretty small.
So does the committee have anything, Jeff?
I would just like to say that I agree with what Brooks is saying, because I hear that all the time with court, is that the driver diversion program, they have to pay for it, you know, in order to sign up. Where just like Brooks said when he started, now you can go in there and plead guilty for a ticket. They can fine you $250. If you don't pay the $20 a week or every 2 weeks, you know, there is nothing they can do. They don't scoff licenses. So getting somebody to do 10, 15 hours of community service, you know, and actually have to do something. But I like the idea that they've set up so that the county doesn't lose anything. You're still going to cover those costs. And it's actually even cheaper than the surcharge, because the surcharge is $93, at least, and you know, small vehicle and traffic.
Are there going to be safety checks in place so the people can't misuse this?
Well, the same checks are in place that are there now. And we look at every single driver abstract and every single application to make sure that they haven't been through this before. Within our own system, it's going to eliminate people, so you can't do it 10 times in a row. We have that set up as well, so we track inside our own system. So the same checks and balances will be there for this as for anything else.
Okay.
So how are you going to...
If you like, Noel's got some more information on that.
How are you going to determine the eligibility sitting out there?
We will use the federal guidelines for poverty. It's the same guidelines that are used currently for, I believe, the vehicle and traffic or traffic court issues. So we'll use the federal poverty guideline. And then to answer your question in regards to how we'll do a check, we'll probably do a random audit. Is what I was thinking is that like every three or the month of June, I'll take the first A last name and check. I won't check everyone unless that's what I'm directed to do, because that could be very labor intensive. I don't anticipate these being more than just maybe five at a month at the most, speaking with our company that uses the service. So I would randomly check those. And if we find someone that is in violation and have filed false paperwork, then obviously I'll take that to Brooks. And then we'll have some sort of, we'll deny them program to diversion, and they'll have to meet the requirements of the traffic ticket as it stands.
We've also prosecuted folks for filing false applications in the past. So
yeah.
They're sworn. So
when would you put this into place? Immediately?
As soon as we can. I might just, we need your approval to change the fine structure. We'll have to speak with our provider and see how long it'll take them to put the system in. Then we'll have to have some new instructions made up. It will probably take us about a month to get it up and running, I'm going to guess.
Does the local law have to be changed?
Yes.
That was so yes, that would be a 2-month process. It would have to come before the full board presentation of the change, and then next month.
I think we also need to get the opinion of the county attorney on this as well.
I guess I'm a little confused as to why we have to change the local law. In the local law we currently have, it says that the fee structure is set at the fee structure we have. All we are doing now is changing the fee structure. So I'm not
community sure. Service is actually a punishment, right?
It's in lieu of a, it's in lieu of a fee. So it's a different, I'll defer to,
they take
to
the county course, attorney. That's not a punishment. That's an alternative to paying a fine.
Correct.
If they do community service, that's a punishment. So I would like the county attorney to review this.
That's fine.
So a motion to table this until we have an opinion from the county attorney.
So moved.
Second.
Discussion. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Nate?
I do my stuff first.
The other one's quick. You can stay right here, I think. Good morning, everybody. A couple of requests for you today. The first one is from probation, and it's to reclassify a currently filled senior typist to a senior account clerk typist. There's actually two individuals, two senior account clerk typists that are leaving shortly, and this is to allow the person who's going to be doing a good amount of that work to train while those folks are still here. Our intent is to take one of those other senior account clerk typist position back down to a senior typist once that position is vacated. So this is a training situation, very important for the office, critical to the office that this person gets trained up. That.
I'll move it, Potter.
Second, Hannah.
Okay, so we've been moving people, Brooks, within your office and sooner or
this
later.
This is in probation. This one's in probation.
It is probation. Okay, excuse me.
We're doing that in a minute.
I got a bunch.
Oh, you were standing there.
He told me not to
stay. I told him to stay. We're doing, you know. Probation.
So I have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
Okay, and now we're under the DA's office, and I'm going to let Brooks explain the lion's share of what we're doing. A lot of this is information, or what you'd like to do. A lot of this is informational. One thing you will need to take action on, though, is letter B, the reclassification of a senior ADA to deputy DA. But again, I'll let Brooks kind of explain the whole thing.
We probably, so A and B.
A and B, yes.
A and B would be motions that we'd be need from this committee. If you approve, Brooks will explain, but those require admin committee approvals, but obviously a lot of you folks are on admin too. So,
okay. So the first thing that I want to do is I currently have an 80% ADA position. My impression is no one in this room likes that position. And it doesn't necessarily fit the office in the best way. That's basically a full-time position with a large capacity to do outside employment. What I intend to do, would like to do, is turn that into a pure 50% position. So that would leave me with nothing but either half-time, or full-time positions within the office. That eliminates the issue that we have had with this, you know, sort of hybrid position. Currently, that position is held by technically Joan Mary. What I would be doing is taking the 80% position and making it a 50% position, which is all outside local court work. And Drinell Bilkari will be filling that position. So he'll be leaving his full-time spot and moving into that position. What that leaves me with is basically 30% of a job that I have to fill somewhere within the office. Trying to find part-time ADAs is just about impossible. I've got two openings right now. In the western part of the county, I may have the capacity to fill those relatively soon. I may not, depends upon whether or not we can get that done. But I've had very little interest in either one of those part-time jobs over the last couple of months. So what I'd like to do is take that 30% of a job, and basically it's about $35,000 in salary. We'll be reducing Drinell's salary by when he moves into the halftime job. Give that to two other senior ADAs who are currently in the office by giving him that work and increasing their salaries. So that moves down to the sort of the two, that's C Yeah, the two C bottom dot is salary adjustments for two senior ADAs. Nate had some numbers there for those. The two senior ADAs are Peter Glanville and Ruth Rosecrans. Peter be picking up 20% of or 2/3 of the remaining work, and that'd be increasing his salary by about $20,000. Bruce Rosecrans be picking up 10% of that work and picking up about $10,000 in salary. It still puts me below the total cost that I have. It means longer days for those guys, but it's nothing that they have to do during regular working hours. What they are picking up is cap and discovery. And that's what we're taking off of the Drenald side of things. Cap is evening cap is what Drenald did every day of the week. So Peter will be picking that up. And then it's dividing up his share of discovery, and that can be done Saturdays, Sundays, or evenings, whatever. But it won't interfere with their regular 9-to-5 employment. So we're just adding more hours to them as opposed to adding another part-time ADA to the office to cover that workload. The savings we're going to spend will be a few thousand dollars less than our currently budgeted amount for salaries. We wouldn't be picking up any of the benefits associated with adding another part-timer to do those jobs. So
so the 80% person is leaving at this point, or
no, what I percent? Here's sort of the technical right now. Joan Mary has the 80% position that was Joe Pelch's position. We flip-flopped them. Joe is the acting deputy. And Drenald Bilkari was 100% ADA. What I'm going to do is reduce Drenald to a 50% ADA. When Joe leaves the position that he has as acting deputy, he would become a full-time ADA, which will leave me with a 50% position and 100% position and no 80% positions. I probably need to draw a flow chart here, but that's what we are doing, is reorganizing duties within the office. Joe has retired. He was an 80% employee because he was the full-time or it was the part-time Hornell city attorney. So we gave him the 80% job. We're getting rid of that. He's retired from that position. Will be 100% Steuben County employee. A condition of the salary change for both Bruce and Peter is that they will do no outside employment that involves any courtroom work. The same thing will apply to Joe's position as well. I'm adding those conditions to their employment.
So once and for all, we're going to get rid of this 80% position.
Yes.
And you'll only have 50% or 100%.
That's correct.
And we're never going back to an 80%. That's
well, unless I absolutely have to for some hiring reason, we're back here and I'm sure nobody will be happy about it. So I think my chance that ever happening again are slim. So we are reducing our flexibility a little bit, but it requires a little flexibility with salaries to get the work done.
So I think what we need is a flow chart of your office at this point. We've been changing positions. I'm assuming at some point with an office manager that this thing should start stabilizing itself.
I think there's no question. I think it's very stable. This is just moving around ADAs. It's moving around responsibilities to fit with some of the things that you folks want in our hiring realities. So that's all really. All we are doing is turning the 80% position into a 50% position and moving some of those duties to other ADAs.
So a flow chart would show me how many. What's position is 50%? What position is 100% in your office? Can you do that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep, I can do that. So that is that proposal, is to reduce it. They sort of go together, because if I can't move the workload to the other two ADAs, then I can't turn that into I can't turn my 80 into a 50. That's because somewhere that 30% work has to get done.
So my understanding, we need two proposals or situations here, the reclassification of the 80% to 50%. So I need a motion and a second to do that.
A motion.
Second.
Okay, further discussion on that? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And then on B, reclassification of the one senior ADA position.
Well, that's the next.
Different.
It's sort of the connected application to the reduction is changing the salaries for Rosecrans and Glanville, because they're picking up the other.
But do we need a motion to do that? You can do that in turn.
No, that would be admin. Admin admin changes the salary, but again, for discussion purposes, since the things are connected.
And just for a side note, for the, you know, to reclassify the position, obviously, is one thing. But as far as the salary, setting it at $125,000, It won't necessarily be exactly 125,000. It'll be whatever's on the grid, one of the steps in the grid, and that.
That's the next one.
Yeah.
That's
the next one. So the next application, which I think does require action, is to reclassify our one of our senior positions to a deputy position. We've never had a true deputy position in the office. We've just designated one of our seniors to be the deputy. That's what we did with David Wallace. I think actually this was Jack's suggestion, so I'll throw the grenade under him at this point. But we don't have an actual deputy. There are some different requirements for deputies than there are for a standard senior ADA. One, the deputy can have no outside employment because they have to act as me, and I can have no outside employment. Two, they have to live in Steuben County. Even though we have a local law that lets our ADAs live outside Steuben County, this position would have a requirement that they live in Steuben County, because again, if they have to act as me, they have to live in Steuben County. So there are some slightly different job requirements. They also have the ability to hire and fire. Is that correct, Jack? That's part of what this application would
involve. They have the statutory authorities that you possess in your absence. So yes, they would. And as any deputy would. And as Brooks said, this has been a confusing point for myself. And I think it's a good practice, in my opinion, for any department where you have someone who's essentially designated as a deputy. Since I've been here, we've always had one senior ADA that has been compensated at a much higher level than others because they have been the quote unquote deputy, but we've never had the title of deputy district attorney. And for talking with Nate, that creates some civil service issues, but it was always confusing to me, especially when someone left and budget time came. It was always confusing to me of why we have someone in the same title making substantially more than someone else. So
that's what I'm looking to do.
Who are you appointing to that position?
Pardon me?
Who are you appointing to
that? I intend to appoint Joan Mary to that position. Joan is an attorney with 25 years experience. She's an Arkport native.
And what is she making now?
Right now she is an 80% employee. So she's making, I think, 84,000 or something of that nature. She is still part-time employed over in Allegheny County. She was their chief DSS counsel. Her total salary she's taking a fairly substantial overall pay cut to come to us. She was also part-time ADA as well.
Going to 100%.
She's going to 100%.
5,000.
Again, with the requirement that there be absolutely no outside employment. So she is... She's a Steuben County employee on a standard Steuben County employee week, 37 and a half hours, but I know it'd be more than that. I know how Joan works. She has the pedigree to do this extremely well. Again, she's got 25 years of experience. She's a Steuben County native, which I think is fantastic. Has no intention of going anyplace anytime soon. She ran the Schultz firm over in Hornell for a long time. So she's done the employee stuff that we have to do within the county. She has, she was chief DSS attorney in Allegheny County for the last couple of years. So she's very good at the budget process and also working with DSS, which is, we are working closer and closer with them as we move forward, particularly with the CAC joining our departments together. So I think that's a great add. And she's very good with the administrative piece, which is something I want to add to the program. So she brings the skill set we need. She's also an accomplished trial attorney. She's been an ADA and public defender. She's tried lots of cases, is very comfortable in the courtroom, and has handled a lot of child abuse cases, which makes her a perfect fit for the position that David Wallace left.
So I need a motion to consider this.
So moved, Potter.
Second, Hannah.
Any discussion?
Yeah, I'm a little confused.
Okay.
Joan Mary is currently an ADA at 80%.
Correct. Well, we brought her in sort of in a training role. She was she was my part-time ADA handling the Hornell area when David's position came open. Joan and I had talked years ago about a full-time position in the office. When I looked at sort of her resume, and the number of people I had interested in the deputy position was very, very small. The couple I talked to, we were, no matter what salary we set, it wasn't going to be enough to bring in somebody with 25 or so years of experience. I felt very, very lucky to be able to bring her in. I didn't have anybody in the office I could promote into that position. But Joe Pelch is doing it, but he doesn't want to do it very long. John Threet does not live in Steuben County and has no interest in moving into Steuben County for this job. So, and nobody else is ready this position. She was doing the part-time Hornell City area and some local court ADA position, and also serving as the chief counsel for DSS. in Allegheny County. She's leaving both of those posts as part of the, sort of the transition process. We brought her into the 80% position so she could still do one day a week in Allegheny County and not just leave them cold, but over a couple of months transition out and also get a feel for exactly what the deputy does. She's been able to work with Mr. Pelch, sit down with me, go through that process, talk to Mr. Wallace a fair amount, just so she's ready to hit the ground running when she does take the position. So
who's filling the 50% ADA, the sheet? It was going to be
right now. I have nobody.
Okay.
I'm covering that with my other ADAs. I have two part-time spots in the western part of the county. They're being covered by my office in general right now. So okay. Those are not filled. I have had a little bit of interest. I'm kind of hoping to talk to some people this week and maybe get at least one of those filled, but I'm not sure. If that falls through, then I've hit every candidate I can think of and nobody has responded. We've been up to Livingston County, up in Monroe, looking at practicing attorneys whose practice that those jobs would fit with. They're difficult jobs to fill because you've got to give up your criminal practice.
So Joe Pelch, is he leaving at this point? Or
pardon me?
Joe Pelch.
No, Joe is going to come in and be a full-time ADA.
Okay.
He just doesn't want to be the deputy ADA. That's okay. Not a level of responsibility he wants. He wants to be in the courtroom trying cases, not managing people, and I can't blame him. So.
Okay. Motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. The salary adjustments will happen in administration.
Mm-hmm. What do we have left?
We can answer some information.
Okay. Yeah. I guess so. There's also, I think it needs to go in front of admin in the end, but we are asking to correct, or we're moving to correct the salary of part-time investigator Wilkinson. He is our CAC investigator. When we created the position, again, this one is funded by DSS. We talked about funding it at $35,000. When the pink sheets came through, for whatever reason, my former secretary put the wrong number on at several thousand dollars below that, and it was set in stone. So now we have to make application before, I believe, admin to change that and put it up to $35,000. Again, it's a budget neutral suggestion, so there'll be no additional cost to the county.
But we don't have to do anything in this committee.
No, just okay. Putting you on notice. That's the same thing we're paying our other part-time investigators. We just, for whatever reason, she put the wrong number on, and once it went through the process, we can't fix it without your approval or legislative approval.
Is this retroactive or just going forward?
Going forward.
We don't retro would be a nightmare.
I don't think we've ever
seen. We normally don't do that for managers, so it'd be going
forward. I just wanted to make that clear.
Yep, and he has been working for us for I think about 6 months now. So,
all right, thank you.
Thanks.
Jack,
everything done, we got to get done.
So,
what?
That vehicle we've discussed?
Oh, yes. Is it still available?
I had not heard back from him.
Sorry. There's a vehicle. Tim will hand this out that he saw through his EMS and 911 coordinators.
Thank you, sir.
I guess listserv, a potential vehicle that as we go to hire an EMS coordinator, we're going to need another vehicle at some point. This might be a good stopgap that Tim saw. But we don't have anything for major equipment this year. Obviously, we don't have an EMS coordinator yet, but it was something that was available that if you folks are interested, we would need to add to major equipment and to be able to put an offer in on.
So I spoke to them right after I saw this come out. They had not had any interest in anybody reaching out to them yet. The price is yet still negotiable. So I had expressed our interest. They said that they were willing to hold it for us. I said, I'd prefer you not to hold it in case, you know, I want to get committee approvals before you put a hold on things. I sent an email to him last week on Friday just to see if it was still available. He hasn't responded back to me yet today. But I would anticipate that if it wasn't available, he would have let me know because he knows we're interested in it.
And Chris did some research on the Blue Book and it was around 20-ish, the Blue Book value.
And it's in much better condition than the current Suburban that we have. So, yeah. And with the additional add-ons of the cabinetry, the console, and the siren and light controllers, you know, that makes it a pretty decent offer for opportunity for us to grab something at a good rate.
It says here additional equipment not included.
Yeah, it's the radios and stuff. Listed. The radios and stuff are not on there, but the siren controller, I believe, is still included.
Lights and so forth.
Yep.
So if we buy this and then have to convert to another vehicle, are these lights and some of the stuff that's in this can be converted to a new vehicle?
Yeah. Yeah. If we have to, we can convert it. Our radio technician does this all the time for the Sheriff's Department.
So this would come out of what budget?
The $500,000 that you have set aside for EMS.
So, and we would have to set up a capital project to buy this?
It would be a motion to add to the major equipment list.
I'll make the motion for discussion.
I'll second it for discussion.
All right. Jeff?
Chris, do you find that this is probably better than leasing something?
At the moment, yes.
Yeah.
Any idea how much a new one costs?
New one's going to be, I think when I bought my Tahoe, it was, you know, my Tahoe is a 2018, I believe, and that was $35,000 plus the outfitting of it.
It'd be 50 plus outfitting.
I think you're looking at $45,000 to $50,000 for a new Tahoe with, and then you have your outfitting on top.
How many miles a year would they put on this vehicle? Any idea?
It depends on how much, you know, field work they're doing. You know, we're anticipating the CMS coordinator to be an administrative position, but they will have some field responsibility as well. So it's hard to say, you know, they may put on, you know, 25 miles maybe a year. It's going to be enough that I think we could get a couple of years worth of use out of it, I would think.
Right.
My only concern with a used vehicle, and I've been through this with other organizations, is to have a good mechanic look at it to make sure that there's nothing that's not foreseen that's going to bite us after we get it. Is that something we can do?
The agency would have to you know, allow us to do that, but in the past, we've sent, you know, one of the mechanics from the shops to take a day trip and go take a look at it. We've done that before for mostly like federal surplus equipment that we've done.
And they did indicate to me that the vehicle's been, you know, regularly maintained with oil changes every 3,000 miles and whatnot. So
well, there's other mechanical things that can bite us other than just that.
Yep, absolutely.
I still think this is a good deal. Even if there is a mechanical issue, you got to go a hell of a long way to beat $50,000 for a new one.
I don't disagree with this guy,
for 2 or 3 years at least.
Yeah, I don't disagree with it. Wouldn't hurt to check it out.
In that 2 years, we also can see if that position is going to be something that we continue.
Right.
And I think this can go for
sale down in Campbell along
415.
415. Yeah.
And I know state bids different, but you can't touch that Tahoe for even $50,000 at the sale on Fridays in Waverly.
Okay, so we need a motion to move this, create a capital, or
we've got it.
Do we have to create?
I'll make the motion to create
the funding for this out of the existing $500,000.
Yeah, we'd just use that if that's okay with everyone, because that's what we have for budget. It's just adding to the major equipment so we could buy it.
So and who's the best Wheeler dealer to make the offer?
Is that what I got? Yeah. Okay. So a motion and a second to buy it. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. And this is coming out of the $500,000 that we allocated for the EMS.
I would suggest we add to it also not to exceed $15,000. So that way, if I can get a better deal on it, we'll work on it. Okay.
That's added.
Okay.
So as long as we're talking about the EMS situation, where are we with the coordinator's position at this point?
Has the advertisement gone out? So the ad is out. I don't know the closing date, but
We're trying to recruit.
Send me an email with it.
We know that there's some neighboring counties recruiting for a similar position, so we want to get it out there. And then we have a meeting later today on this topic for some information to share with you for your next meeting. The other things that we had in motion, the CON, those sort of things. And then also, if you want a quick FYI, spoke with the mayor, and you might have seen some of the news, spoke with the mayor of Hornell. If you recall, April 1st was given as the drop dead date for municipalities that Hornell normally responds to or actively responds to in a mutual aid arrangement. And we've been made aware that a number of towns from Fred's area,
I think there were four of them.
Yep. Signed contracts with Hornell. The ones that are outstanding, and Tim and I had long conversations about this on Friday, are the town and village of Canastillo. They have not signed a contract with the city of Hornell, from what I understand. And they, if you recall, they were the largest, I would say, mutual aid volume outside of the city of Hornell. So that's an unknown, but many of the other surrounding towns have signed that. So it seems like that situation has stabilized a little bit more right now.
And as far as the reimbursement for training, have we done anything as to how we're going to set that up?
Still working on that. The state is not being exactly helpful in determining, because we want to give you what the top end potential cost is. And the state is, Tim's been pestering them.
Yeah, I think I got something back a little late last week, but I was out of town for the coordinators conference, so I haven't had a chance to total all the numbers that they had provided us. But I think it was, in the vicinity of what we talked about, what Ken provided to you last month, as far as the number of EMTs that are taking training. Typically we can look at anywhere from, 30 to 50 EMTs being trained a year. Now, whether they're new, whether they're recertified, that's, the big question.
That's going to have to be, a policy decision. If you want to go forward, do you want to pay the hourly rate for people who are recertifying or just the new people coming in?
Well, my point is that we would do that for the recertification as long as they're not paid EMTs. It would be
volunteers.
For the volunteers. So That's my understanding of what I was proposing.
Okay. Sitting out there. So we should be in a position for next month, if you'd like to take action, for to have data for you so that you can.
Yeah, so let's do that. Let's put it on the agenda for next month and discuss this and see where we are with the coordinator's position. So, okay, Brad?
I made you aware earlier about Rick Andrews. It's trying to get a meeting set up for the towns in my area to create an ambulance district. And it's my understanding they did have a meeting. Tim, I believe, was there. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, nobody jumped up and down with excitement to get it started. But they're not letting it just drop.
So I know several of the towns have had discussions about this. Most of the towns have indicated that they thought it was a good idea, but nobody has really stepped forward to move it forward as of yet. From what I understand, Cameron is interested, Woodhull's interested, I believe Troopsburg as well. So there's several that, and this process started from my deputy fire coordinator in the Hornell area, Mike Wilson, who's attended many of the EMS meetings. And he kind of came up with this idea and put the numbers together and pitched it to the local fire chiefs, who then have taken it back to their towns. And I know Bob's interested, I think, as well, in Tuscarora, trying to get
Addison
something.
Is too.
Yep. So
there's interest in Addison.
Yep. So there's interest there. It's just a process of getting those municipalities together to determine the next steps and where they're going to go and how they're going to do it.
I'm surprised Greenwood didn't jump on this, because when I had the meetings with local ambulance corps, that was one of the things they suggested doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe they just haven't gotten back to you. I don't know.
Yeah.
So I know that several of the counties that out there have adopted a plan sitting out there to deal with this. And I think that's great. But I think the process we're using now, allowing this thing to fall into place before we actually do, you know, a final report is the way to go. So I don't know. That's just my opinion. So anybody have anything else?
One other thing, if you don't mind, just wanted to let you know that April 9th through the 15th is Telecommunicators Week. That's for your 911 dispatchers, where we honor our dispatchers for that week of the month. I just want to give them kudos for the job they did this weekend. If anybody happened to be monitoring the radio channels and the radio frequencies during the storm on Saturday, they answered 155 calls in 3 hours. The primary part of the storm, the first 2 hours from about 4 o'clock on till about 6 o'clock, they answered 109 calls and entered 89 jobs into the CAD system. So they were busy, and it was very, very busy, and they did a great job. So kudos to my folks. And if you happen to just send them a note that week of the 9th through the 15th, that'd be appreciated.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank them. Motion to adjourn.
Motion. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
We're out of here.